Live.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's play this. Guess it didn't work, did it? I'm playing the music.
Yeah, not
supposed to play it.
Not hearing anything.
No, I didn't play it. I'm supposed to play it automatically. It screwed up. Okay,
yeah.
Everyone, welcome to Shattered Innocence. Well, first, I'll read this vision statement that I have. Healing our wounds. Abuse affects our lives in so many ways. Abuse is torturing, crippling, and debilitating. What advice would you give others? Are you there for the person, or are you part of the problem since you may have turned a blind eye? Are you claiming to advocate against abuse, but condemn the people who tell and share their stories? Do you want to be part of the solution? Are you an officer in the judicial system not doing your job to help the victim? Your duty is to serve and protect. How do we open the public's eyes so they can acknowledge and feel the need to help protect the children and our citizens? Let's stand united and discuss ways we might heal our wounds. You matter. And on the line right now, I've got a friend, and he is Will Pennington. And every once in a while, he might butt in and say something like, try to correct me on something if need be. Hello, Bill. William. Are you there?
Well, there we are. Hello, Darlene.
Yeah, I know sometimes you might try to remind me of some of the things that I might forget. So I appreciate you being here.
You're welcome.
Okay, Shattered Innocence author discusses her life. I do not like talking about me in the third person, like, so I will say I am from the southern part of the United States. I'm an author, an advocate, a podcaster, and a YouTuber. Darlene Clark has dealt with child abuse. The child abuse types that I have dealt with is physical, psychological, sex, and sexual. Spousal abuse I dealt with was physical, mental, and monetary. The religious abuse I dealt with was demeaning, narcissistic control, and sexual abuse. And abuse from people in power, judges, lawyers, police officers, business owners, etc. I share my story to help others know they are not alone. I also help others to see and believe they can overcome. I hope to help others regain your strength and your power. And I try to please God by helping others. Okay, I will start off with an introduction that I have in my book, and then I will be sure to say about the dynamics of my family. Strength comes from the past. People continue to tell me to forget the past. It doesn't hurt me as badly as it used to. I am telling my story, one of survival, of courage, of hope. I aspire to reach out to others to whom this has happened to. People should learn not to judge anyone. The worst thing is, I have heard is, I would have done this if this happened to me. Such as Bill, they would tell me, I would have hit him in the head with something. You don't know what you would have done. You didn't live it. Have you heard people tell you things like that in the past? Would you be in with law enforcement? Have you heard people tell you that? I would have called the police. I would have run away. But see, they didn't live it. They don't know what they would have done either in my situation or in anyone else's. The person has enough trouble surviving and coping without hearing someone saying what they would have done if that had happened to them. It is degrading. Surviving the horror of abuse is an inspiration in itself. For those who have lived it, they know the hell. Each day was a matter of survival. Yes, some laws are supposed to help the abused victims, but in my situation, they didn't on numerous occasions. Whenever you hear someone's story of abuse, please do not tell them what you would have done. The person feel worse. It is like saying you could have done it better and that we didn't do a good enough job surviving. To the judges, are you God? The Bible warns against judging. In Matthew 7, verses 1 and 2, Jesus said, judge not, that you be not judged. For what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. We need to pat ourselves on the back for surviving the horrors. So please don't say what you would have done or tell the survivor that he or she needs to stop discussing the abuse unless it was you in that situation. I hope to show my strength by sharing my story. I'm hoping others in similar situations can open up and talk about it. The worst a person can do is not talk about it. It gives the perpetrators more power. Let's get our power back and keep it. The reasons why I felt like I was destined to write my book and tell my story was the first time I was on an online support group. One day I shared a piece I wrote named Regina's Triumph. I can read it to y'all later if y'all had wanted to, me to. The members of the group asked for my permission to copy and print Regina's Triumph. They informed me to write and portrayed how they felt. It helped them explain to their psychiatrist/psychologist how they felt since they had trouble explaining their feelings. It made me proud to be asked this. My words would help my abused friends explain how they felt internally. I felt honored. So I permitted them to show the doctor or therapist the literary piece. There were three times I'd given up writing this book. All three times within 3 days of me wanting to give up writing, devastating abuse happened. The first time I was talking on a popular messenger service, which was Yahoo. I'll tell y'all right now, it was Yahoo Messenger, with my friend named Cowboy Bill. It's not the same William that I'm on with right now. He informed me about his friend who was a police officer who had given him some horrific news. The 4-year-old child overheard her mother and mother's boyfriend arguing. The little girl went to ask the mother's boyfriend to please stop fighting. She was trying to get his attention by tugging on his shirt. He backhanded her, which sent her young body down a flight of stairs. She didn't survive. The second time, it was about a year earlier when a friend asked me to speak with her daughter, who was being abused severely. I tried to convince her to leave. Close to a year later, Molly contacted me to inform me her daughter died. She was stabbed over 80 times. I had given up for the book on a few days before I was notified of the horrific news. I was asked to let her friends at a social media network site, which at the time it was called NetFriendships. .com. I had to let them know the disturbing news. She gave me the newspaper link, so if anyone doubted the horrifying news, the link would prove truthful. The third time I gave up writing this book, a woman went to a local Texaco. It was getting closer and closer, Bill. These stories were getting closer and closer to me. A little while later, the mom told the clerk her car was stolen with her 5-year-old son in the back seat. An APB All Points Bulletin was issued. Deontay Glass was located inside the family's garage. It was too late to save this precious 5-year-old boy. He was deceased inside the same vehicle his mother had claimed was stolen. He died from blows to his stomach from bringing home a bad report card. The mother's boyfriend was the abuser. The mother was involved as well, since she helped her boyfriend cover up this hideous crime. Now here's my story. Do you have any questions about any of that, Will?
No, I don't. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay. I just wondered if you had any. And if anybody wants to call in, they could call in at 515-602-9656. Again, the number is 515-602-9656. Thank you. Okay, the family dynamics, which, you know, you were around to know, and you know me personally, Will. You know a lot of
right.
what I've been going through, and you know what all the hurdles a lot of people have tried to put in my way of the so-called family. You know that.
Right.
Okay. So Daddy Charles was in the United States military station in Germany. He met Hilda at a bar. Hilda already had 2 known children, Gerald and Angelic. Daddy Charles and Hilda had a child together, Gwen, in Germany. They brought Gerald, Hope, and Gwen back from Germany. Up north in the United States, Charles Jr. was born. Hilda and Charles moved back to the South. While serving at the arsenal, Marlene and I were born. I supposedly kicked Marlene out. I was born about 20 minutes later. I was able to come home from the hospital a lot sooner than Marlene. I didn't know where we lived, but a great aunt helped take care of me. Later on, Hilda and Charles would abandon us for about a week at a time. Angelic and Gerald were not allowed to cook at that time, yet the bottles needed warming, but back then they weren't allowed to turn on the stove, so Marlene and I had to drink cold milk. Can you imagine having to take care of four children, still in diapers? Marlene and I were infants. Charles Jr. was 1 year old, and Gwen was 2 years old. Gerald and Angelic were 7+ years older than me. Back then, there were cloth diapers also. It wasn't the Loves or Huggies like today, or Pampers. Or Angelic and Gerald had used T-shirts and whatever they could find. Aunt Zelda came over many times and would discover us abandoned. She found our, she changed our diapers, fed us, and cleaned the house. She would then leave. Hope, I called one of my sisters Hope also. But this is Angelic, and Gerald had good hearts. They were supposed to attend school, but they couldn't leave us without someone taking care of our needs. One time, Daddy Charles got out of jail, and he was angry. The door was secure. I was around 2 years old. This is according to what my sister had told me. Daddy had a gun and was shooting through the windows. Shards of glass and splintered wood was going everywhere. My older sister pushed me to the floor and laid on top of my small body to protect me. A family member shared this story with me, as I said, it was my sister. When Marlene and I were 2 years old, Derek was born. While Hilda was still in the hospital, I had trouble breathing. I do not know what happened to Daddy Charles's vehicle. He was running up and down the side of a major road to get help. A police officer stopped. He tried to give me mouth-to-mouth, but it didn't work. The officer drove Dad and me to the hospital. The emergency physician administered a tracheotomy. The doctor admitted me to the hospital to try to find the cause. I was there for 2 weeks, but they couldn't find the problem. I had found out later that I was adopted by all the nurses. They sent me home with a big stuffed teddy bear. When Derek was 2 years old, Hilda started abandoning the five of us. Gwen, Charles Jr., Marlene, Derek, and I were abandoned in a grocery store. Luckily, Gwen knew my aunt's phone number. She would come to pick us up. She kept us with her until Hilda came back to get us about a week later. I suppose Angelic and Gerald were in an orphanage at this time. My aunt grew tired of Hilda abandoning us. One time when Hilda came to pick us up, my aunt put up a fight and refused to let Hilda have us back. Hilda and Charles got a divorce and had a custody battle in which my dad won. Dad met a lady named Sue. Sue had two children named Bart and May. Bart was 2 years older than me, and May was 1 year older than me. They married and later had a boy named Paul. I kept claiming that he was my baby. I've always wanted to be a mommy. That's the dynamics of that. And a couple years later, I guess around 1974, they had another child, and he had passed away and died. So I'm going to go ahead and say, Bill, William, if there is anything you want to ask before, if you want anything I should touch base on for my younger years?
I think you covered most.
What?
I think you covered most of the background. Your volume, I don't know. It seems like it comes and goes.
Yeah, that goes along with yours, too. That's happening in both of us, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but the volume is fluxing so much.
I'm going to talk about a funny memory that I also got in the book, and I want the people to have a good laugh about this as well. All right. So there were some good times, which wasn't all just bad, all right? Don't get me wrong. It wasn't just bad, but still the bad outweighed the good anytime somebody abuses children. Betty Carl show. It was such a big surprise when Mom Hilda and our new stepdad, David Smith, showed up to pick up Marlene and I to be on the Betty Carl show in Huntsville, Alabama. David arrived in a camper pickup truck. Mom Hilda and David went to the back of the camper. My eyes were as big as lollipops with excitement. I had never ridden in a camper before. Daddy David loved the excitement on Marlene and my face. I asked, where do I sit? David replied, you can sit anywhere your heart desires. Mom Hilda, Marlene, and I rode in the back while Daddy David drove. It was so neat seeing the kitchenette. I had never thought it would all fit into a truck, into a camper, into a vehicle that you drove down a road. I sat at a table while Marlene sat across from me. Mom Hilda was instructing us to be on our best behavior since we are going to be on television. I did not understand the concept. We arrived at the studio. Our seats were a smaller style of bleachers. I chose to sit right beside this cute, dark-haired boy. Marlene, the cute boy, and I all sat up top with just a few others on the row, and there were other rows below us. Mr. Benny offered us a 16-ounce bottle of RC or double cola. I never had my very own drink before. I was shocked. Benny started talking with a child at my far right. He was asking her questions. I noticed we were to give our bottles to Benny as he spoke to each one individually. I was not finished with my drink. There was no way I was about to give him my bottle. I was not done. Stuck it further into my mouth as the acid started choking me a tad. I did not cough or open my mouth. Tears welled up. I paid no attention to the camera guy. Mr. Benny asked me, what is your name? I temporarily took the quenched bottle out of my mouth. My name is Darlene, I stated as I was about to put the bottle back in my mouth. Mr. Benny asked, is this your birthday today? I knew to have manners, so I replied, yes, sir. It's mine and Marlene's 7th birthday. I put the bottle back into my mouth. He teasingly asked, please give me the bottle. I was adamant. I stuck the bottle further into my mouth as I shook my head, no. Mr. Benny would take a step to the boy beside me, and he stepped back as he playing with me. The guy said, give me that bottle. I saw the camera guy rotate the camera around and around and around. Mr. Benny Carr was so nice that he let me finish the birthday soda. When Marlene and I got home, Gwen was seated in front of the television set. Gwen stated, Darlene, how did you do that trick? I asked, what trick? She said, can you teach me that trick? How did you drink soda while turning flipped? I did not know what Gwen was talking about. She said, that was a cameraman rotate the camera as he was filming. I shrugged my shoulders as I proceeded to leave the room. I did not know what anyone was talking about, but now it's hilarious. But the Betty Carl show, to anybody that don't know, that's not from the South, give you a little bit of history on that, which I've got to scroll back up to, I have it right here. There's a official website of the show, BennyCarle.com. It's spelled BennyCarle.com. This man was a true pioneer in the golden age of television, but also in a specific genre of children's television. Anybody that's got any kind of comments or questions, I would like y'all to do that. A lot of the things that happened to me, I knew that I was being abused. I knew that I was being tortured. I knew about the hide-and-go-seek game like my daddy would play with me. He came into the girls' bedroom. There were four of us that shared a room. And Dad had a 12-gauge wielded at his side. And I thought, oh, no, not again. He said, who's ready for a game of hide-and-go-seek? And I was like, one day he's going to shoot one of us. For real, you know. And we had to run out of the house, and I noticed that my siblings were going around the opposite way, but I knew better than follow them. Everybody didn't need to go in the same direction. Really, everybody needed to scatter out in different locations. But I knew I was going to be the one that was found first. So I went and I hid in a little place in the garden, and no plants were coming up yet. We had done, killed it, and we had done, removed a lot of the rocks. We still had to kill it again where we could plant something. But it was, you know, the early parts were, you know, where it rained a lot. Bill, you know, in the spring when it does that and then it hardens up. And then I heard my stepmom coming out of the house, and my dad was chasing her around the house while he was shooting a gun up in the air. And chased her around the house, and she laughed like it was a lot of fun. I thought, that's crazy. You know, when you shoot up in the air, that's got to come down. The bullets or whatever's left, I don't really know what was in a 12 gauge, how that would look. But I knew that whatever went up must come down. So the next thing was, it got deathly quiet. And I looked back up, and it was quiet. I was hoping that he got his mind on something else. I didn't want him to still have it on this dangerous game. I put my head down with a sigh of relief. Then a couple minutes later, everything kept feeling like it was a lot longer. You know, every second seemed like it was minutes and minutes. And the next time I looked up, I seen my dad with a gun. And he saw me, and he pointed in my direction, and he shot. When he shot, the dust went all over me, and I don't know how, but a rock was right there in the dirt, and that's what protected me, a rock. It had a hole right there in the rock, and that's what protected me. I said, oh, no, I got to stand up. Because he's reloading as he's walking towards me. I'm going to end up dead. So as he gets closer and closer, something tells me, don't run, because he wants you to run, because he'll shoot you in the back. That voice kept warning me, don't run. So I was walking to him, and I could not feel my legs up underneath me. It's like I was floating. And I stared at him right in the eyes, and I walked up to him, and he said, damn it, I wanted you to run so I could have shot you in the back. I said, what? What? I was shocked. And he turned around, and he said, well, I got to go kill something today. I'm going to go after your siblings. The next thing I know, Dad turns back around towards me, throws the gun down, and then tackles me. And he raped me, and I thought, at least the rest of the kids are safe. I hated the fact that this happened to me, but I was glad that it didn't happen to somebody else. Other instances at home, like Daddy Charles, he would summon all of us into a room. He would make me step forward while he hit me in the head, knocking me, my 10-year-old body, to the floor. He told my siblings, Gerald, he was about 17 years old and a keeper of the high school football team, and Bart, he was about 12, Gwen was about 12, Charles Jr. was 11, Mae was 11, and Marlene was 10. My daddy told them to keep me all over my body. I curled up into a fetal position. As they were kicking me, Dad instructed them to keep me as hard as they could. They circled me, kicking me all at the same time. When they were kicking me, they had to call me fat, stupid, ugly, and retarded. Darlene, you're fat, they yelled. Kick, kick, kick. Dad ordered, kick harder. Kick as hard as you can. The siblings said, Darlene, you're stupid and retarded. Kick, kick, kick. I cannot remember when it stopped or even when I got off the floor. I sometimes woke in bed with my aunt wiping me off with a wet cloth. She told everyone I was coming too. My stepmom came in. She was so irked at me because I was unconscious and I had wet the bed. I'm not sure how long I was out of it, but they refused to get me any medical attention. She would tie the wet bed sheet around my neck, making me wear that all day long. As I said, people could call in at 515-602-9656. A lot of the things I did not remember until I had a hysterectomy. And after I had a hysterectomy, the doctor said, "Were you abused?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And really, I didn't think nothing about the sexual abuse at the time because I just remembered one or two cases of it. I didn't remember, you know, the brunt of what really happened. The brain is wondrous. The brain hides a lot. It blocks it out until you're ready to break the walls down and remember it. And then he said, doctor said, I worked 2 hours at first removing scar tissue, and it was like none had been removed at all. And he said, I had to call a kidney surgeon in there because I accidentally cut your ureter. So while I was waiting on the kidney surgeon to come in there, I worked a couple more hours trying to remove scar tissue. He said, it's like none had been removed at all. I have never seen anybody that damaged before. And I've seen a lot of people damaged, but not that damaged. And I thought, whoa. But I thought it was something strange when a doctor pulls up a chair in a hospital room to have a talk with you. I knew it had to be significant. And he said, I kept saying, it's okay, it's okay. You know, it's past. I thought that everything would be okay as long as I acknowledged I had been abused. I thought everything would be okay. But it didn't take long before the nightmares started. And then the nightmares and the bad dreams. And I got to where it was difficult for me. I became agoraphobic. I was afraid to even walk outside my door. I was afraid of being attacked. Well, it didn't help that much either when your husband is abusing you as well. When you're having these flashbacks and you're having these memories, that's horrific. You don't have nobody to really talk to or anything. So a therapist had went, well, a guy at church, he was an elder. He went ahead and got a therapist, and I started seeing him. And he wasn't really a good therapist at all. He closed I was him at his house, and he'll go into his study. That's where he had his business. And he would lock the door so that make sure that his wife did not come in. And for a long time, I would just sit there and watch the clock as it went around. I didn't trust this guy. There wasn't no way I was going to give him any of my information. So I just watched the clock mostly as it ticked out. Later on, he thought it was better to get off some steam and maybe us wrestle. So we started wrestling a little bit, which he was a lot stronger than me. And he got on top of me, pushed me to the floor, and kept his head on my breast and said, "Get off of me, get off of me, get off my breast, get your head off my breast, get off of me." He said, "An old man has to rest." And before he let me go, I was to sit in his lap, and he had a tight grip around my waist, but he was not going to lock the door and let me out unless I did what he said. He said that your husband agreed to unconventional therapy, that I could do anything that I think is appropriate or necessary. Said so. The game with anything that I do. But he said the the elder of the church agreed that he could do anything to me. And also, my husband had agreed that he could do anything to me. So why he had me sitting on his lap, I hated it because sometimes you see the wet spot on his pants. It was so sickening. Everyone, it was very sickening. So it didn't take long, which, oh man, this is really hard getting back to remembering some of this, William. Are you there? Wish somebody would call in and ask me some questions because it'd make it a little bit easier. I think William must have fallen asleep or something. Okay, so I want to get to where...
I'm here, hon. I'm here.
I'm having a little bit of trouble for some reason, okay?
I was just doing some other things. I got my mic back on. I had my mic muted.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Thank you. Yeah, I can hear you now. And I remember when I was...
I'm using my desk mic.
Yes. I can remember when I was 11 years old, we had to go stay with my mom again and my stepdad, and she fought for custody of us, and she won, and we had to go stay with her. And I did not like staying there. I wasn't about to do what she said. She said I needed to get a job. And, well, for a while here at 11 years old, you know, a lot of places will not hire an 11-year-old. They said they don't want to be responsible for an 11-year-old. So she told me if I wanted to eat, I needed to work. So I did plant tobacco for a while. I did not know that I was allergic to tobacco, and I come down with pneumonia. And I was out of work for a week. We did not have a home phone where I could call my boss and tell him I would not be at work, but my twin worked there, and she was supposed to tell him that I had pneumonia and could not come to work. Okay. So I'm trying to get up to some important parts in this, what had happened. I'm sorry, everyone. I had suffered a concussion a couple of weeks ago, and so it's like I am having a lot of difficulty in getting this going. All right. So I'm going to go back up to, it's going to help me with being able to phrase it how I want to say it, you know. But I know that they won custody, and my mom was mad because I had lost my job. So she told me I need to find another job. And she said I needed to prostitute myself out. I said, Mom, I'm not going to do that. She said, you got to do what I tell you to do if you want to eat. So she had a job at Montgomery Ward's in Florida, and my stepdaddy had a job working at a heater thing, putting insulation in heaters that you send out to people. So while they were gone, I would sneak in the house, and I would have a mayonnaise, ketchup, salt, and pepper sandwich. And I hurried up and did my fork, my knife, and then my glass that I had tea or water in. I hurried up and washed that, dried it, cleaned up whatever mess. and then I left, started walking back down on the railroad tracks all over town and everything. And they got back home. The rest of the siblings, they didn't spend a night at home either. They were always at a friend's house and stuff. And my family never cared about where any of the kids were. They never called or never went and checked where kids were. They never did. But I waited until the light in the house and their bedroom went off. And then I climbed in the back seat of the car and I slept in the car. Can you imagine having to sleep in the hot car in the summer? There's only one way that I survived. I had to be the grace of God. The case, we arrived at Mom Hilda and Daddy Elsie's little two-bedroom shack and Daddy Elsie's Ford Galaxy 500. The small framed house was up on concrete blocks. There were three German Shepherd dogs behind the fence. In the backyard was another building that housed the washer dryer. There were three beautiful rose bushes in front of the porch. We bounded up the three or four steps. The front porch had two living room recliners on it. We asked if we could go inside. We dared not open the door until we were given permission. Went inside and sat on a red plastic couch. The living room looked cozy with its small fireplace. Daddy Elsie and Mom Hilda's bedroom was to the right of the living room. The living room was attached to the kitchen. The small hall had two doors, one door for the bathroom and the other for the bedroom. Of course, we five kids could not all fit in the bedroom. Lynn and Marlene told Mom Hilda about the abuse we had endured. I wanted them to hush. I did not trust Hilda for some reason. Our social worker kept coming and talking with me at Mom Hilda and Daddy Elsie's place. She kept trying to convince me it was in the best interest to stay with Mom. I'd rather stay with Dad, who on occasion told me he loved me, than to never hear the words or constantly hear I was not wanted. I thought it weird to see Mom only twice in the 6 or 7 years since the divorce. Maybe she would send one letter in 4 years. I could not remember at the time why I was so afraid of her, but now after therapy, I know why I disliked her so much. Anyway, Mom and Daddy Elsie won the custody case. We arrived home, and Daddy Elsie said, "Let's go celebrate the victory." We all climbed back into his Ford Galaxy 500, but Daddy Elsie said, "Darlene, get out of the car. You cannot go. The rest of the kids could go. You are not kin to any of them, not even blood-related." I thought this was strange, since I was supposedly a twin. His mom was listed as my birth mom on my birth certificate. I have always heard these were my four full-blooded siblings. Daddy O.C. told me to go to the neighbors and beg for food. They left. They ate out and had a nice chicken dinner. I went to my friend's house down the road. I did not mention food. I was so hungry. My stomach would not stop growling and hurting. But I did not want them to think I was there to beg for food. I would rather go hungry. My family got back and said their dinner was good. They were all full. They asked me what I ate. I said my friend had already eaten, and I did not eat anything. Daddy Elsie replied, "I guess you may be able to eat tomorrow." I wanted to cry so badly. I knew it's not okay to ever show emotions. I did get close to him at times. He would be on the front porch drinking a Coke 45, would ask me if I wanted one. Finally, I said that I did. I drank one with him. We were best buds as long as I drank. I did not like the taste so much. I was only 11 years old. Majority of the time I ate, I had to sneak inside and fix myself a condiment sandwich. Now I hate sandwiches. Is there anything you want to say, Bill? William, I'm hoping you're still here.
There it is. I had to change the mute off, turn the mute off. You got most of all the story, I think, sweetie. Because I know
there's
you
there's never
going to
be a...
Huh?
Go ahead.
I said, you told a lot of the story about Daddy LC and things like that.
Yes. And you know that according to my birth certificate also, you said that maybe the reason why I cannot get a lot of the information concerning my private stuff is because of my daddy's certain number there or something?
Oh, your MOS, your daddy's military. I checked your daddy's MOS in the military, and it's listed under military intelligence.
So that's why
that might be why I cannot get a lot of my information at that time. And at the time that you were born, it was the time that you were born.
Even if they got these new laws today, where I'm supposed to be able to get access and still deny it, say things don't exist, or before they said it existed, and then later on they said they don't exist. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things that went on during the Vietnam War that they don't want to admit to.
Yeah. Exactly. Do you remember anything that I need to go over after this point about before I go back and bother them to get back home to my dad?
Not that I know of, hon.
I know that one time my sister, Gwen, had a boyfriend while I was still living with my mom. My sister, Angelic, and her husband came to visit us. It was always a treat when she came to visit. I always loved being around her. But we were there visiting, Gwen and Travis went to look into an empty house to see how the rooms looked. Gwen and Travis came back. I wanted to see this for myself. Travis volunteered to go with me in case I may be too short to see, in which he would lift me up to look through the windows. I could see inside the spacious room. I remember the shorts that I was wearing. The shorts were blue plaid with a light blue T-shirt. After I viewed the last room, he started playing with my short bottoms. I fought, but Travis was stronger than me. He undid my shorts hurriedly and proceeded to lick me. I kept trying to push him away, but regrettably, he won. I see my stepdad, Daddy Elsie, going to the garage behind our house. I wanted to scream, but I was worried about him hurting me. I feared he might hurt or kill me since he was on probation for murder. Gwen rounded the corner and saw her boyfriend doing this to me. She shouted angrily, "I'm going to tell!" Travis ran after her. I was petrified, so I hid out in the cow pasture in front of the house. I finally decided to go inside. I was afraid of the unknown. I sighed in relief that she didn't tell. I'm glad I got to go back and visit my sister, Angelic. But you know what? I really thought that school was totally different in Florida than it was in Alabama. The kids seem to be nicer to me. They're nicer to new people. And I really like that. So then we went back with Daddy, and he drove Marlene, Charles Jr., and I to meet Dad in between where we lived with Mom Hilda. Where Dad and Mom and Sue lived, Marlene wanted to come with me to keep the twins together. It was a pleasant surprise. Their behavior had improved immensely. They had moved from where we lived with them last. Dad and Sue still had the same jobs. Things seemed strange at the new place we were living in. We lived beside an old shack. We did not have as many animals as we did before the move to Mom Hilda's. In Daddy Elsie's place, we had chickens, ducks, dogs, and some stray cats. I could not believe it. Dad was not cheating the animals. I've been saying this about Dad shooting animals. Back when I was younger, he would tie these stray animals up, and he would feed them gunpowder, and then he would had tied them up, and he would make us go out there while he shot them in the head. We had to watch that. This time around, Dad fixed feast. He did not make me bark at my food anymore. We sat at the table like a normal family. A lot changed for the better. We had our drinks for our meals. There was laughter and smiles. It was very nice. We had a lot to do because Gerald was getting married in a few days. So that same year, my dad died. And this is one thing that gets me that I'll never forget about my dad, the last conversation we had before he passed away. It was a cold November night of the same year. We came back to Daddy Charles and Sue's house. We had been back since the beginning of June. I was not feeling well. I had bronchial pneumonia again. Dad told Sue to go take the kids to church. He was going to stay home and take care of me. He lit a fire in the fireplace. It was very hot in the house. He covered me with blankets, trying to knock my fever out. He made me some peanut brittle. He came back in the living room, offered me some of his freshly cooked candy. He said, I sent Sue to church because I had something very important to tell you. I am sorry for the abuse I had done to you, but Sue made me do it. So then my thoughts were, my dad was a cruel person. He was an adult, and he had a choice. He did it on his own. It hurt me when he blamed others, but I thought it was a big step for him to admit he was wrong. He quit. I have a certain job at work to do. I'll be gone for only a few days. I'll be back to get you. He left at the end of November. A few days later, around midnight, the phone rang. He came in and woke us up and stated, get up. Your dad is dead. We all got up and went to the kitchen. I was watching Sue. I already knew Dad was dead. Sue started cursing and hitting the wall. She had her back turned, but she did not know that I saw part of her facial expressions. She was smiling. She let out a big laugh. She said, we don't have to go to church anymore. We can do as we please. I can't be mean to you again. I won't have to put up with the nonsense of God and the church. I was very confused. I did not let anyone know about this. I held it in. When people came over, she put up a big front. Dad's dad embarrassed me tremendously. He was smacking the women from church on their backside when they walked by him. I felt sick to my stomach. And Aunt Lottie and Aunt Zelda took me and my twin sister to their house that night, and I stayed there until the funeral, me and my twin sister. And there's a big excerpt about that, which I'm not going to read on that. But getting back to the point when the sexual abuse and I was having the nightmares and all, I was having problems with dissociation. And I did not understand what was really going on. All these mixed emotions, all these mixed feelings. I did not understand. And then also to know and remember, I finally got to insurance change, and I could leave that one therapist I was seeing and was able to see a psychiatrist. And he started believing my stories. And then with him, I was able to flourish. He wanted me to press charges against that first therapist because he said that was wrong for him to do what he had done. I said, but my husband said it was okay for him to do, so he would not stick beside me if I was to prosecute that therapist for what they had done. But remember what the first therapist was saying? He was asking me questions like, when was the first time you had sex? And I got to the root of it when I was with that first therapist. And all of a sudden, I knew about the sex abuse when I was age 2, where my supposed birth mom put my 2-year-old naked body on the kitchen table where she told me to lay there. I better not fight. I better not squirm. He gave her $30-something to do this to me. And Dad was sitting there, too. And my mom got at the top of the table, and my dad went behind the guy as the guy used the beer bottle on me. And I remember that, and it had really bothered me a lot. And then the next excerpt I remember about was my dad, when I was 4 years old, he went in the living room and he parted my legs as he cut me with a knife down at my private. So I had went and seen a doctor around here later on after my divorce. And don't get me wrong, I've seen doctors in between. Like when I was married and all that, there's gynecology appointments and anything. And nobody ever told me that anything was wrong. You know, I never questioned it either. But I remember the doctor saying that somebody messed you up really bad down there. I remember him saying that, but I didn't think nothing of it. But so when I remembered that about my dad cutting me, I went and told a therapist, I mean, my family doctor over here in Pulaski after I moved here, said, do me a favor. I said, I never asked the doctor before to check down there and tell me whether it's for real, whether I had been cut. And she said, yes, only 2/3 remained on one side of that part that he had cut off. And I go, okay. I was able to deal with that for some reason, you know, because I had, and then last year, though, I went to see a gynecologist, and this was actually a true gynecologist, and I asked her about it, and she said, all that's left is a little scar tissue tag. So it had been cut. All that's left on that one side is that. And that sent me into a deep, dark depression, knowing that I was even cut worse. And to know that when I had a boyfriend before I ever moved to Tennessee, and I had told him about my dad cutting me there, and he went to work and told his buddies about it, and he came back from work and said, you were really a boy. You're really a guy. You were born a guy. You're not a woman. I didn't know how to react to that. That hurt. I knew I gave birth to my sons. They came out of me. A guy cannot give birth to babies, you know? And then there was other times when I remembered about my stepmom. She held me down when I was a teenager, which I had totally forgot about that to that therapist, I mean, psychiatrist that I said had believed me. And I asked him, why did he believe me? He said, because I asked a question, you answer right away, but it fits in. No matter how hard it is to believe, it still fits in. It's a lot of people that answer that quickly and it don't fit in, you know they're lying. I said, okay. I said, well, thank you for believing in me. And I said, all of a sudden, I don't feel good. I said, can I lay down? He said, sure you can. You can lay down, sit down, whatever you like. So I lay down on a couch, and I jumped back up, and I said, oh, no, oh, no. And I said, my stepmom, she held me down while her son raped me. I was a teenager. And I said, I got pregnant from that. And I said, then I remember that 3 days before something she did to the baby, that she had built a big fire outside. And she had tires in it around it. And I was wondering why she would have it so hot like that, because the woods being in July, August times area, you know, it could easily catch things on fire. Why would you have a fire burning for that long? It did not make sense. And I asked her, I said, why do you have a fire burning? She said, I wanted to continue burning to get hot enough for what I need. And that's all she would tell me. A couple of days had passed, which nobody knew I was pregnant, okay? Nobody knew at all. Heck, I didn't even know. I was kind of like conditioned to believe, and I was their little robot. And the next thing I know is she had me lay down on the kitchen floor, and she uses a coat hanger at me. And then the next thing I know, I had a baby. I'm in and out of consciousness. I'm in and out of realization. Next thing I know, she's handing me a little baby boy. She's already got him dressed. We bond. He wrapped his little fingers around one of my fingers. And next thing I know, she's bending down, picking up the baby, walking away from me. And I was like, what's she going to do with my baby? I saw her walk to the right of the kitchen sink towards the second door. I seen the second door open. She put him down on the kitchen counter. Then I seen the knife up in the air. And it came down. Sorry. I said it got down. And... but nobody knew about it. There was no birth certificate. It was hidden, you know. William, it was all hidden. And then after this happened, I managed to get myself up. And I went to the side door, which led to a carport. And it was an open carport. It just had the top, like a metal carport part. It was not enclosed. And I seen her walking toward that fire with a big blue baby blanket. And I thought, she's going to throw my baby on the fire. And then that's all I remember about that. I remembered it a lot years later. Like I said, that psychiatrist. And I remember when I was pregnant with my first child, with my marriage, I went to the health department because the insurance, Blue Cross Blue Shield, would not cover it unless you were married for over a year. So they would not cover it. So I had to go to the, like I said, the health department. They said, you had a baby before. What'd you do with it? I really didn't think I had a baby before. I thought I would remember if I had a baby before. I did not understand how I could not remember having a baby. I blamed myself for not remembering it when I did remember it, you know? And they even called the police, and the police came and questioned me at the health department. They said, you had a baby before. What did you do with it? I had to call my husband at work and say, you need to come and get me because they questioned me about me having a baby before. I didn't have a baby before. I really didn't remember having a baby before. I didn't remember none of it. And boy, when I first remembered it in that therapy room, on my hands, I couldn't deal with it, man. I kept trying to kill myself. I was beside myself. I didn't know how to deal with it. I blamed myself for not being able to get up. I blamed myself for not being able to protect him. I blame myself for not remembering it when the cops questioned me. I blame myself for all that. So anyway, when I remembered it at that psychiatrist's office, he said, well, it will be your word against your stepmom's. He said, so I'm not going to call and report it because of the fact that you might go to jail the rest of your life because of something that she did. So that's why it was never reported. If anybody's got any questions, you can call 515-602-965. I'm sorry this hits me, hitting me hard. Sometimes it's easier on me, and sometimes it's more difficult. You got anything to say, William?
Let's see.
You got anything you want to say?
Well, no, you covered most of everything that you're talking about.
And I know that I don't want to pressure you too much either because of the fact that you are in a... William, y'all remember to pray for my friend William right here because he had been in the hospital and now he's in rehab. And he's taking the time to call and talk to me, to be there for me.
Yeah, I told you to call in on the show.
But sometimes I get okay.
Are you okay?
No, I'm crap.
Yeah, I know that part usually gets you.
Yeah. It does really hit me hard.
Yeah.
It really hits me hard. And then I go to remember back when I was married also. And I had a meeting. I did genealogy. And there was back then we had telephone books where we could call people with the same last name that we're looking up. Call everybody by that last name and try to get information what we can. Well, this one guy, he had information, so we agreed to meet at a public place, which I thought that was safe. I did not remember him from the past or anything. Note that, okay? And he says, we never met, and all this other kind of stuff he claimed at the time. And he said, we'll meet at the second story, I think it was, either the second or third floor at the Huntsville Library that he got a genealogy in. The minute, before I could even sit down, I put my purse down, and then he said, I remember you. I said, from what? And put in mind, this was an Alabama state trooper. I said, from what? He said, from all the child porno. He said, my daddy had over 300 child porno, and you were in the majority of them. I fell. My legs went out from underneath me. I was going backwards, and I had to grab onto the table to keep from going over the chair because I was going with such force that had I not grabbed the table, and the table did come up off the, you know, that one of the legs went up partially. So I was really falling. And that state trooper had the gall to say, and I even enjoy doing you. He said, it makes me hot even thinking about what I did to you even back then. And I said, what? I said, well, how old was I all during all this? He said, you were from age 4 to age 11. And sometimes age 14. I said, what? I said, I don't remember any of this. He said, your daddy would take you to the auction and then the back room. That's what they did. And to know that this guy was his daddy was an auctioneer and had different businesses where they messed with kids, like ice cream places, a burger place, and everything, to know this. And then one of my neighbors around here said, yeah, she used to work for him. Said it was kind of crazy how he would treat some of the girls differently, like he had special type of things with the other kids. And I said, I know why. And I said, but anyway, when that state trooper told me that I was 4 to 11 and then maybe back again at 14, I thought, well, that's odd. Because, you know, I was in Florida from 11 to 14, right? So he stopped at saying at 11 and then put it to 14. Like, how did he know? How did he know unless that's true? Because he never said they had me in it in the years that I was in Florida. You know what I'm saying? They never said that. But since then, I had to, like I said, I started telling my story and writing it down. Sorry, y'all, everybody. I had to mute that, see if he's got the nurses in there with him. If anybody wants to call in, they can call in again at 515-602. 9656. I know a lot of this is hard to take and understand. Sometimes it hits me worse than it does other times. Sometimes I could talk about it and I'd be okay. Other times I think I know what's hitting me bad, because guess what? This is August. That's what's going on now. That's what's hitting me harder, because it's getting close to around the time that it actually happened. It's getting close to the anniversary. The anniversaries of things make things more difficult. I don't know if anybody else had realized that or not. Since we got about 24 minutes. I really like that psychiatrist. It's kind of funny because I called him Dr. Mario because he was short in stature and he looked a lot like Mario from Mario Brothers. And my sons were seeing a therapist and he was short. I mean, not, he was very tall and skinny and lanky. And so we had a standing joke where there's Mario and there's Luigi. See, and here's like, here's a little bit of the discussion I was telling y'all about with Dr. Kemp. I did not watch the clock. I informed him about my prior therapist, you know, and all that. I spoke with Jeffrey about Dr. Kemp's suggestion. He refused to support me and prove to me that he cared about me, knowing Mr. Saber violated me. Jeffrey replied, I do not want trouble. I quipped, I do not want trouble either. I know he did some things to me that were not right for a therapist to do. He replied, Sam Saber told me and Mr. Fincher he had to do some unconventional therapy to you to bring things out to heal you. I replied, that does not mean he could touch my private areas or even have semen on his pants. He kept the door locked even at his home to make sure no one came in. His wife tried to come into the room when I kept yelling for him to get off of me. I was silent when she cried because he told me to hush. How I wish I would have yelled, said, call the police. He won't remove his head from my breast. You think that's okay? Jeffrey added coldly, yes, unconventional therapy. I walked away feeling like a whipped dog. My head was hanging low for having to remain silent, although I was violated. I was thinking, I was treated like a prostitute. You and Mr. Pitcher paid him, and he could do anything he wanted with me. I sighed as I knew Sam Saber did as he pleased without any repercussions. I kept wondering how come no one cared about me. They even berated me. It was just more control. I gave Dr. Kemp the sad news. Dr. Kemp replied, you could do it without Jeffrey at your side. Credulous, I retorted, I cannot without support. I will be hounded at home a lot from my elders and Jeffrey. I am sorry, but thanks for caring. And so I get past that about the baby episode, which I had told y'all about. But it really sinks in more. So I do have the book, and it's called Shattered Innocence. It's at Amazon. I kept blaming myself, like I just read on there. Why couldn't I protect my baby? Why couldn't I? Okay, let's see. I had decided to finally leave my husband, and then I kept going to abuse women's shelters and then going back home and all that because one of my sons would not go to the women's shelter with me. So I wanted to keep it all together. Okay. Let me explain a certain thing on my way of thinking about something, all right? But memories of trauma are blanketed and hidden in my mind. I consider that below any emotional points because I do not know and understand the depth of the hidden devastation. I will try to explain my thinking further. Point A, when the memories of trauma are surfacing, I try to cope with them. Point B, they bother me so horrendously that it's hard to function. I need professional help. Point C, I find a therapist to discuss them. Point D, I try to find out if the memories of trauma are a false memory or if they really happened. Point E, I accept that the memories of trauma happened. K, Point F, assign a no self-harm contract. Point G, I try to understand the conflict between the past memories of trauma and my present psycho-emotional state. Point H, I try to come to terms with these memories of trauma, as horrible as they are, but it seems as if I'm looking through dark shades. I do not see a light at the end of the tunnel. At the time, I didn't. There was no light at the end of the tunnel. And here's poems and other writings. And I'll go through past a couple of these regular things. But one thing that really helped me was my special place. And I can imagine that, and it helps me to heal when I think of this special place. As I walked through the fields and into the woods to arrive at my special place, I admired all the beauty surrounding me. I was admiring God because of his many wonders. I noticed blades of grass, the trees dancing in the wind, the tiny insects on the ground, and the many little frogs on the grassy path. Things were so serene. First, we walked to the creek at the back of the property. I stopped while taking in the water's ripples in the cool fall breeze. I let out a laugh because of how serene I felt, as if I were walking with God as I admired the beauty. I'm glad I did not walk upon any snakes. I was either lucky or protected. I circled as I went to the cool, fresh water spring. I loved sitting near it while examining all of God's handiwork. I proceeded to walk on until I was in the center of the woods. There was a tree that had a lower limb that looked like it was made to sit perfectly, but now I found my special place. Oh, the peace and tranquility. I did not have to worry nor think about the abuse in which I was enduring. This special place took me away from my fears and problems. I love to visit my tree alone. I felt no need to talk. I just basked in the beauty surrounding me. I felt safe and secure. A long time ago, I had written this thing like, I need to know. I need to know if all is okay. I was tired of this never-ending battle, never knowing which direction were here or there, scattered like seeds in the wind, shattered like a broken window pane, never-ending bleeding, turning, yearning, always a response of no. Does who is responsible feel remorse? Oh, but of course, no remorse. I need to know they feel remorse. I need to know and feel understanding, sympathy, love, and acceptance. I Need to Know was written around 1998. I'm still married and having horrendous flashbacks. Before reading all, please take a moment to reread it and to understand the emotional concepts in the lyrics. I Need to Know if all is okay. Tired of this never-ending battle. Years ago when I wrote this, I did not feel all was okay because I did not want to struggle to get better if the end of the tunnel was more darkness. More cruelty, more pain. I'm happy now how I struggled and did not give up. By God's mercy and grace, I survived. There were some good times and some bad times. That's a part of life. It is well worth viewing it from a healthy healing standpoint than through the dark shades I previously used. If someone thinks to tell someone who is going through something similar to stop being so negative, don't say that. Just be there for the person. Let them express themselves. Do not question and tell them things you would have done if you did not live their life. It was not you who learned it was not okay to have your own thoughts and ideas. Some who are hearing this, they understand what I'm saying because you endured it. It is hard hearing others say what they would have done this or that. They had no clue. It does not help the person dealing with the memories of trauma. In fact, it is infuriating and belittling. It tells the survivors they should have done better, but in fact, they did the best they could. They survived. That's the number one thing. Never knowing which direction from here or there. I never knew which direction to go for help. Only a few were skilled enough to truly help. The ones who were not skilled enough told me such atrocities as, you were never sexually abused. You wanted your dad to have sex with you, but it never happened. You lied about your past, etc. Boy, all this kicked me off. I had it blocked for so many years. When it reared its ugly head, I was devastated, to say the least. I did not know how to deal with such traumatic sexual abuse, these memories of trauma. There was no way I was about to push their memory back down and seal them as well, lying to myself by denying it. It was unnerving when I realized the truth. Finding a therapist who listened and seemed to understand without judging is one of Demas, a truly skilled therapist, thoughtful and compassionate. Scattered like seeds in the wind, shattered like a broken window pane. I had so many mixed emotions at the time from being abused in the past and dealing with the present abuse I endured. That's why I was incapable of seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. And here and now was abuse as well. It was a hurricane of internal emotions I felt. I can be loved. I am worthy of being loved. I can't be loved. I'm not good enough to be loved. I'm not worthy of love. All of these feelings at the same time. What a conflict of emotions. It was all because I was not loved. My husband did not console me when I cried. Often the resounding words, shut up, always told us shut up, even as a child. I knew children were to be seen and not heard. I felt it was never ending, but it does end. I do not feel the daily pain of abuse, whether it be past or present, though I do feel the pain often. Sometimes it's like a slap in the face. The old conflict with me, I am elated that the pain has dissipated tremendously. I used to feel I was all alone and no one cared. At times I feel the loneliness, but now I can see that others care. There are a lot of people who do not know me who care. Human nature, good people generally care. It's the people that get to know Eric. Look at all the people. There's a lot of his followers. There's a lot of good people at YouTube. There's a lot of good people at Facebook. Thanks to you, everybody. Y'all know that y'all can make it through as well. Please do not give up. Shattered like a broken window pane. Never-ending bleeding, turning, yearning. Always a response to no. Does who is responsible for remorse? Oh, but of course, no remorse. At the time I wrote the above poem, I felt like I wanted the abusers to feel remorse for the pain they inflicted on me. In my healing, I accept the fact I do not need to feel their remorse. I feel bad for the perpetrators and pray they get their hearts right with God. I left the bad, negative, abusive family and friends behind. I acknowledge that abusers in general denied he ever did any heinous acts towards victims. They usually blame the victim, saying things such as, they are crazy, they like being hit, they make things up, they hurt me instead. If you try to get an apology, usually you will not acquire one. You may leave hurt and angry because they blame you instead of accepting their faults. Pray for them. I had to stop blaming myself. Boy, that was tough. I had accepted the blame for many years and always believed I deserved all the bad abuse that happened. I used to believe everyone was treated the way I was. I wondered why God would put all of us on this earth to just receive beatings, abuses, but not love. I'm happy to know I was wrong. To know punishment is one thing, but cruelty and abuse are entirely different. Parents are to rear their children in the ways of the Lord. I learned things that happened to me because of man's free will. I need to know and feel remorse. I need to know and feel understanding, sympathy, love, and acceptance. From accepting all of this, I now feel understanding and empathy as love and acceptance. I do not need sympathy anymore. I need understanding. And so others will help the abused and the downtrodden. Those very people dealing with memories of trauma, learn to not judge by what you believe when you hear someone's story. Just be there for somebody. You see something, say something. And this is the story that made it to where people wanted copies of my writing because they dealt with dissociation like I did. And this was Regina's triumph. I had to act like I was someone else just to cope. I soon learned I could be myself and it was okay. If someone didn't like me for me, it was their problem, not me, not mine. There was a family that appeared to the outside world as poor. Soon to be arriving at the Duncan family was an unexpected and unwanted child, Regina Diane Duncan. She came prematurely with the father claiming that the mother had fallen. The truth was that they wanted to be rid of this child. It didn't take Regina long to realize not to cry when she needed anything. She learned to be silent. When Regina turned 2 years old, she saw a lot of hearts left on a table by one of her sisters. Regina knew that hearts meant to love, something that she needed since she came into this world. Regina aged, and every year on Valentine's Day, she saw the hearts and felt the need to be held. She felt the need to be told she was loved. She desired to be told she was a good girl. Regina found 8 sticker hearts. She decided to make wishes for them. For the first heart, she wished her mother loved her. On the second heart, she wished that her father loved her. On the third heart, she wished that her brothers and sisters loved her. The fourth heart was a wish that someone, anyone would love her. The fifth heart was a wish that she wouldn't be hungry anymore. Her sixth heart was a wish that she wouldn't be hit or yelled at anymore. She decided to save the other heart, 2 hearts for later. Regina grew up and came upon the remaining hearts one day. She wondered, where did these come from? This seems so childish to keep. As Regina tried to discard the remaining hearts, she found a sense of reluctancy. She couldn't understand it. It just seemed like bits of paper. Paper? Why can't I throw these away? Regina started having terrible dreams. It was a little girl named Gigi talking to her. The little girl reminded her of herself when she was little. The horrendous dreams came frequently. The dreams didn't make any sense to her, so she decided to see a psychiatrist. He diagnosed her with having DID, which is dissociative identity disorder, PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, and depression. The psychiatrist gave Regina the name of a psychologist who specialized in these fields. She was a clinical psychologist. The psychologist gave Regina some titles of some books to read so Regina could understand her condition. Regina thought she had a happy childhood. She soon realized that wasn't true at all. When Regina was little, she was smart with a bright imagination. With the pain she felt, Regina couldn't take the pain alone. But Regina developed another person who helped her to cope. Regina knew nothing of this happening. Things were difficult for Gigi. She couldn't handle it alone. She needed a bigger person who could do things that only big girls could do. So in came the help of Miss Love. The 3 parts of Regina were Regina, the body of course, Gigi, who took a lot of the abuse, and Miss Love, who took on the difficult tasks that were expected of Regina. Regina only knew of herself, but she had to admit that she had blackouts and time lapses. The books made sense. People would call Regina by other names. Regina would just smile at them and walk on by. Gigi and Miss Love told the therapist the story behind the heart. The therapist had an idea. He told the different personalities to tell the hearts the stories, to share the pain, to get the feelings out, to throw the hearts away. These hearts don't bleed if you yell, scream, or cry. These hearts can take it. The therapist's idea worked, although it took time. The abuse didn't happen overnight, so the healing wouldn't happen overnight either. Then the 3 personalities became one adequate, loving person. Today, the new Regina always takes sticker hearts wherever she goes. She approaches people with a friendly hello, asking if they mind having one of her hearts. She tells them with a smile, "This is to remind you that someone cares." Regina started using her past to help others who have been abused and traumatized. She wanted to get the word out that you can overcome the abuse, to never give up. You are true survivors. Do not see yourself as weak or not good. See yourself as a strong person you truly are. And there will be one other thing that I read right quick. And this is because of when my mother died, supposedly birth mother. And I wanted to let y'all know about that. Sorry, my screen keeps kind of going black, and I had to keep pushing on it to do that. William had to go because his people there. Oh, he had to go ahead and go. But there's a lot more writing that's in the book as well, so I'm trying to stand down to a certain part on how it affected me when my mother had passed away. All right. I think it's called The Death Knell. The Death Knell, Innocence Lost. Okay. I got that in there again about the death now. I got that again about the little girl and the little boy and the friends. going down. That's my take on it more in depth about the three children. I gave a brief account before. I wrote this one, Tears for the Children Lost. Tears for the Children Lost. I did this January 2021. Tears for the Children Lost. Tears for the Unprotected. Sadness for Innocence Lost. Joy for their beating hearts. Joy for their breaths of life. Sorrow and mourning, the loss of life. Sorrow and mourning for the pain they felt. Sad they died too young. Tears, sorrow, empathy, and anger at the despicable people responsible. Okay, time to get on down to my mother. I don't even want to go through talking about the divorce thing. My ex-husband, you know, don't want to do that. Okay. The loss of Mom Hilda. I was visiting my friend Tiffany after hearing the devastating news. Mom Hilda passed away. I had advised my grown boys to not see her when she was alive. My son would have visited with his child. Mom Hilda had a habit of accusing men of raping their daughters. I did not want my sons to go through that. I did not know I cared about her that much. The last time I spoke with her was about 2005 on the phone. I contacted her because I was trying to have a fresh start and try to forget the past, but her words were shocking. Hi, Mom. She said, are you showing your naked body to men or prostitute yourself? I was thinking, how did she not even say a friendly hello? I doubted some of my memories under this. This was validation of her selling me as a kid. It was buried deep in my subconscious. No, I am an adult now. I have a choice. I choose not to do this. She said, you need to show men your naked body and prostitute yourself. I am an adult now. I have a choice. I respect myself. She said, you were born a prostitute. I taught you how to do it. I wish I would have killed you when you were a baby like I wanted. I hung up the phone. I could not believe what she said. I tried a couple of times to call her since, but I hung up before she answered. I could not stand to hear her voice. I thought I would vomit. Imagine if your birth mother said these things to you. Would you possibly avoid her, or would you continue listening to her toxic trash? When Mom Hilda died, it threw my body into turmoil. I was shaken, and I kept losing my balance. I asked Tiffany to please tell the missionaries. I did not know if anyone else I could have asked to come and pray with me. I went to social media and posted, I am having a very rough time at this moment. I just want to think of the positive surrounding my mom's passing. I have forgiven her for the cruelty she inflicted upon me. I just couldn't deal with the pain, both physically and psychologically. I've been having seizures and a lot of mini strokes. Please pray for my health. I'm doing what I can under my circumstances. I'm doing fantastic for someone who had endured all the years of torture and devastation. I've got to be okay for me and my sons and my grandchildren. Please pray for my strength. A lot of people did give me things and say that they're praying for me, and I'm saying, but my siblings came on threatening everyone that gave comfort. And we're going to go ahead and end today. If y'all got any comments or anything, please hit me up. And thank you so much for listening. God bless.